VGMP.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of VGMP, the Video Game Movie Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Evans, joined by your other host, Rory Jocelyn, as always.
Hello, I am a paragon of virtue, Jamie.
That was weak sauce. But that's okay, because we're about to review a weak sauce film. Ladies and gentlemen, today we are diving into a film based on the hit sci-fi gaming RPG trilogy from way back when I was still a child. We're talking about Mass Effect Paragon Lost. As you can imagine, is based on the Mass Effect franchise. It's an animated movie that takes place in between the second and third games. Yep. Now, before we move on to talk about the film itself, as always, we'll talk a little bit about our experiences with the franchise. I can start because mine is very short. I've played maybe the first quarter of Mass Effect 1, and I didn't like it, and I stopped playing it.
Okay.
The combat was tedious, which I've since learned is like widely agreed that the first one has terrible combat, apparently.
Yeah, they spruce it up a lot in the second one.
It was just the controls. The controls were garbage.
Oh, I know. There's yeah.
And I just wasn't interested in any of the characters, really. I do struggle with sci-fi narratives sometimes when it's hard sci-fi, where it's like literally set far in the future. Unless they set it up very clearly, I sometimes struggle. And I don't think Mass Effect did set itself up very clearly.
Okay.
Personally. But anyway, what's your experience with Mass Effect?
I was really excited for Mass Effect when it came out. I pre-ordered it, got the special edition, was psyched for it. It was kind of ruined for me by a magazine. I was still reading gaming magazines at the time. They stated that there was a big flaw in the game, that you could only save it 10 times. And if you save it more than 10 times, it breaks the game. I can't remember the exact magazine, but I basically made my save scarce because I knew it was a long-ass RPG. So that kind of upset me a lot before I even got to fully playing the game.
And did it turn out that wasn't true?
It did turn out that wasn't true.
Because I've never heard that before.
I think it may have been like an early review. Maybe their copy was bugged.
Right.
That's the best possible explanation. Or they just fucking lied.
Did this magazine come out on the 1st of April?
I can't remember. I honestly can't remember. I liked the setting. I liked the idea that you were politicking across space. It had a kind of a more Star Trek-y feel, because you are in a pseudo-military and you are trying to be a diplomat. The problem was, as you say, the combat wasn't great. It wasn't... I don't remember it being awful. A bit clunky. The main problem was I got to a point in the game where I couldn't go any further. Basically, there's a fight with the woman who plays Deanna Troi, Marina Sirtis. Mm-hmm. She voices a female character that has telekinetic powers.
So she's playing Deanna Troi?
Yeah. But like an evil Deanna Troi.
Oh, okay.
Now, the problem is I'd built my character around, I was like, I don't really like... I like science fiction more than I like science fantasy. Mm. So I don't really like it when people, you know, I can levitate things with my mind. All of that stuff doesn't really interest me as much as it does interest other people that more into the fantasy element. Mm. So I built my guy around, well, I'm just a fucking dude in space. And that kind of makes it more fun, because then it's like I've got to try and negotiate with creatures that are realistically more evolved than myself. I can't go, oh, I'll use my telekinetic power to wipe your memory or whatever the fuck. So, my character was built purely as a strong man. This battle was impossible. You run in, and she has this ability that she can use on repeat. She says some fucking line, and then your character just faints, flops to the floor, getting shot at by the enemy at the same time. So, my character kept running in, going, flopping on the floor, getting up, still being riddled with bullets, and then she'd do the thing again, and just be, in front of the enemy, and I'd just get riddled to death.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, clearly I need something in order to defeat her. I'll go back to my ship and leave. But where I was, it wouldn't let me go back.
Right.
So, I was now stuck. I couldn't go any further, because I couldn't win the battle, and it wasn't a skill issue. I literally kept flopping to death in front of enemies. Mm. So there was nothing I could do. And I couldn't return to the ship to build up any telekinetic power or anything to return to the fight. So I got to that fight, and I never progressed further.
Right.
After several attempts, I was like, this is impossible. So I turned it off and then went back to it. I sold it.
I always meant to come back to it, but what stopped me was, because I then heard that it's like one story over all three games. So I thought, okay, I'll wait for the trilogy to finish, and then I'll get all three and I'll play all three. And then I heard about the infamous ending of 3, where basically the ending's garbage and they had to patch it with a DLC ending.
Yeah.
And on principle, I never played the game then. Because I was like, I'm sorry, I'm not going to support DLC endings.
No. I did play Mass Effect 2 a little while later when I had an Xbox One, so it's a little while after the trilogy had finished ending. On Xbox Game Pass, they made Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3 free to download and play if you're on Game Pass. So I downloaded 2 and 3. I've never actually played 3. I did play 2. I completed 2. I really, really enjoyed 2.
Could you understand it with not having played 1 all the way through?
Yeah, it was fine, because essentially they do like a soft to hard reboot.
Right.
At the end of 1, it seems to be at the end of 1, the ship you're on, the Normandy, gets destroyed.
Right.
It's assumed that you are dead, and everyone, like, with all hands lost, except for Seth Green, who was the only recognisable guy on it.
Because I always heard that the cool thing about Mass Effect was your created character ports over.
Sure.
Into each game, so you don't restart from, like, base stats again.
I think I had to rebuild mine in number 2 because I hadn't finished 1 to port it.
But it does port over if you have.
I assume so, but I've never had the opportunity to try it.
Fair enough.
But yeah, so I played 2, really enjoyed it. The combat's a lot better. The story's tighter. It's not quite as loose. So you end up having this much more narratively fun story. Again, didn't play 3, but I had already played... I then got on Xbox One, I got Mass Effect Andromeda, which is technically Mass Effect 4.
Yeah, which I've heard is terrible.
It's so bad, I understand why there isn't a 5.
So apparently they are making an official Mass Effect 4, apparently.
Right.
Because apparently Andromeda is officially a spin-off game.
Yeah, the problem with 4...
But it was really bad, I heard.
Yeah, the problem... So Andromeda technically has all the right components to be a good Mass Effect game.
Mm.
The controls are a bit meh, but they're not that bad. The graphics can be good, but they're really... They're a big step back from the original trilogy. Bear in mind, they were made for the later generation.
You say it came out a lot later.
Yeah, and there was a few things where the characters looked a lot more Uncanny Valley, and they looked a lot more plasticine than they did in the original Mass Effect games.
Right.
And you're like, why does this look worse now? And I'll be honest, the storyline is a bit shit. It's nowhere near as compelling. The other thing as well is the world that you built in Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3, might as well forget about it. Because Mass Effect Andromeda, they just go, oh, you're a new guy on a new ship. Or girl, I suppose, if you want to be a girl. You've been flung somehow from one of the Mass Effect relays into the middle of nowhere. And
hang on, so it's Star Trek Voyager?
Basically, but without as good a story. And that's saying a lot, because Voyager's horribly episodic.
Why don't they just call the game Star Trek Voyager?
Because I think essentially that's what they were going for, and they probably just didn't have the license.
Yeah.
They went, no one cares about Mass Effect now that the third game fucked up the ending. I'll just buy that license.
Yeah.
Andromeda was bad.
So that's our experience with the game franchise. I did not know what to expect going into this movie. I'd never seen it before. You'd never seen it before.
No.
I am very aware that I've been a negative Nelly for a few episodes now. Maybe not, because I don't think we've recorded all of these episodes strictly in order. But some episodes we've done, I've been negative on. So I'm going to try and avoid words like abysmal, tragic, preposterous.
Well, that's lucky, because this is great.
God awful. And instead, I'm just going to say, this movie was not for me. Because I think the key issue, and this is on me, this isn't on the film, this is on me. The key issue is because I don't know fuck all about the Mass Effect games. This film is not made with a general audience in mind.
No, it's definitely not.
I had no clue who anyone was, why they were on the planet they were on, why they were fighting the Krogans, is it?
Yeah, the Krogan.
Because from the bit of Mass Effect that I played, I thought the Krogans were your allies. Krogans, I'm guessing, you fall out with them at some point.
Well, the thing with the Mass Effect games is that you can essentially connect them to Star Trek very closely.
Right.
The Krogan are essentially Klingons.
Right.
So they are allies, but they are loose allies, and sometimes they turn on you or you turn on them or whatever. It's, yeah.
How do I get Daleks in the game?
Because it's based on Star Trek, they don't have any Daleks.
Well, that was BioWare's first mistake then, wasn't it?
I I'll agree with you on that. I would have
based
loved
it on Doctor Who.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know about that. There's not enough good villains in Doctor Who.
Whoa. I can name a good Doctor Who villain for every good Star Trek villain you can name.
Law.
The Master.
The Borg.
Cybermen.
Q.
The Daleks.
Trelane.
The Toclophane.
The Herogian.
The Slitheen.
The Jem'Hadar.
The Celestial Toymaker.
The Founders.
Let's go with the Silence.
Very good. You know what? I give you the Silence. The Vorta.
The Vashta Narada.
The Cardassians.
Cassandra, the flat woman from what's it called? The second ever Eccleston episode.
Yes.
Man, I tell you what, that's one of the things that guaranteed I was going to keep watching Doctor Who. Teenage boy, and he brutally murders her like that. I was like, fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, listen.
I hadn't even said Weeping Angels yet.
No.
The point is,
there's some loads that I haven't mentioned. I haven't mentioned the Klingons, the Romulans.
The point is, both shows have been on for a very long time.
Oh, mate, we'd be this is a whole podcast in and of itself.
Of course, we could also do, I bet I can name a shit Doctor Who villain for every shit Star Trek villain you could name.
100%.
Well. You guys had a rug at one point, and we had a giant...
I won't have that. The rug was a very good villain.
You had a rug, and we had a giant CGI invisible so that they didn't have to CGI it for most of the film.
Is it John Cena?
That attacks Vincent Van Gogh. Do you know what's funny? That's a great episode, the Van Gogh episode. It's like really emotional.
Right.
And really like you tear up watching it. But the villain, because the villain is sort of secondary in that, because really the episode is about Van Gogh's depression.
Right.
And his lifelong battle with depression.
And the CGI, but because it's monster.
Because it's Doctor Who, they had to put a monster in, and it is a CGI invisible rooster. And I'm pretty sure it's only invisible. To be fair, in the story it makes sense, because the whole point is no one believes Van Gogh that he can see it, and it's like a metaphor for his depression.
Like a right cock.
But it's not good. Let's put it that way.
Oh no. Okay. So
anyway, I think for me, my takeaway from this film was there is. I know we're not at the recommendation stage yet. But there really is no point watching this if you haven't played Mass Effect 1 and 2, and then you watch this in between 2 and 3.
Yeah,
if you're just a general person going, oh, I don't know anything about Mass Effect, maybe I'll start with Paragon Lost, don't, because you'll be lost.
The thing is, I've played all of 2.
And you still didn't like it.
Well, it still made no sense. Unless some of these characters come back in 3 is the only other option. And again, as I say, I haven't played 3.
I think someone told me they do. I think.
The thing is... Okay, so let's break down the story somewhat, and then we can go from there.
Well, we start with a 20 goddamn minute battle sequence.
Which is unnecessary.
On the most boring, dusty, desert-type planet you've ever seen.
But at night.
At night.
Because the rest of it's in day.
Which, fair play. It's hand-drawn animation, so I get it. It's hard to draw it all.
I don't know, though, because some of it wasn't.
Well, some soldiers from
Krogan.
What I'm guessing is the Federation. Because I don't know what the terms are in...
The Alliance.
Mass Effect. The Alliance. Yeah. Alliance, Federation, fucking... Big diff.
Well, it used to be...
Patrick Stewart should have turned up.
It used to be the United Earth Space Probe Agency at the very beginning of the original series, but they thought that was a bit long-winded.
UNESPA.
USPA, yeah. United Earth Space Probe Agency.
USPA.
Yeah.
That sounds like it's one of Eevee's evolutions in Pokemon.
Eevee has become a USPA.
Because one of them is called Espeon, isn't it?
Yes, there is an Espeon.
So you could have a US Espeon.
There's also
Ultimate Espeon.
There's also SBO in Sonic.
Yeah, he's a chameleon.
He's feeling a horror in there.
He's the best member of Team Chaotix. Fight me, Charmy fans.
There are no Charmy fans.
Go to DeviantArt. You're...
look, I think we can agree that no matter what the argument, you can always win it with go to DeviantArt.
Exactly. But
doesn't matter how small that population may be.
I'm going to go to the United Nations Conference on Nuclear Energy, and when they try and say there's no danger to nuclear energy, I'm going to go on DeviantArt. I'd like to cite to the courtroom source 1 through 500.
Does that work?
And they're all pictures of DeviantArt.
Does it work for flat Earth? No, of course the world is round. Look at DeviantArt.
It does. It works for everything. Absolutely everything. So there's this big battle sequence against the Krogan.
Yep, Krogan.
Krogan. Cronenberg. The beer.
David Cronenberg.
David Cronenberg. Do you know what? Better film. All these soldiers fighting one white-haired Canadian man. And they're all like, well, you've got no way of beating us. There's like 12 of us and there's one of you. And he goes, but you're forgetting chest vagina. And pulls out that weird gun, flesh gun thing from...
Existence. Yes. Anyone who doesn't know David Cronenberg is sitting there going, what the fuck are they talking about? Chest vagina with a fish gun.
Look up Videodrome by David Cronenberg. You'll see the chest vagina.
Yeah.
Anyway, this fight scene, this battle scene is A, far too long.
Oh, yeah.
B, not at all interesting.
Nope.
And three, like, don't get me wrong, I'm no stranger to films that have epic battle sequences. Mm-hmm. The entire last hour of Avengers Endgame is a battle sequence.
Right.
The difference is, that is a battle sequence that is the culmination of 24 movies of build-up.
Yeah.
Do not put your epic battle sequence at the start of your film where I don't know who any of the characters are and therefore don't give a flying hoot if they die.
Yeah.
There's meant to be an emotional bit where the captain gets crippled, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And what's the main character's name? Do you even remember?
His name...
We just kept calling him The Rock.
No, it was Vega.
Vega, that
I only remember it because we just watched Street Fighter.
Mm.
And I was like, where's his mask and his shiny claws?
Yeah.
But no, this is a big-necked guy who's literally the size of The Rock.
Yeah, and we get like a bit, don't we, where he has to like relocate his hip or something, or his shoulder or something. I didn't care, because I was like, I don't know who these people are.
No.
Are they in the game?
They basically spilled out after like 2 minutes with like the worst version of the beginning of Aliens possible.
Mm.
One guy being Mr. Gropey Hands Man.
Mm.
Who I think near enough survives and has an honourable death at the end, whereas the woman he's groping absolutely doesn't. And you're like, that's a bit of a weird choice.
Yeah. I would fight for her rights as a woman, but we kept calling her Jugs all the way through it, which you probably have to cut.
But
to be fair, watch it. That was her only defining character trait.
Yeah.
Was she had giant cans.
Yeah.
Her name was Camille. I did at least learn her name.
Right.
Yeah, there was nothing to that character other than she constantly had a midriff out.
Yeah.
And large chesticles.
Yes.
She gets this absolutely horrific death that no one... Like, that should be a moment.
Yeah, it's not.
Like, she gets turned into a giant bug thing. And everyone kind of just goes, oh, well, that's a bit unfortunate, isn't it?
Yeah, all of the emotional moments in this are rushed. And it feels like if you'd removed the 20-minute opening action scene, you could have given those things time to breathe and they would have been more impactful. There is one good bit of this film that I'll mention later.
I think it'll be the same bit that unfortunately doesn't work because everything leading up to it is shit.
Yeah.
And that's a shame. But yeah. Anyway, we then, 20 minutes into the goddamn film... Oh, sorry, they win. They win.
They beat all
the Krogans except for one.
One who spares.
One of them's going to kill.
Yeah.
And Vega's like, no, we're not murderers. You know, we take him prisoner of war. We then skip ahead 2 years. Bear in mind, we're 20 minutes into the film already, and the film's only an hour and a half.
Yeah.
We do a two-year ahead time skip where the Alliance have basically... told that team to man a colony. They're like the defense force for a colony on that planet.
They've built some massive gun. I want to make something very clear, though. Mm. The thing that doesn't help with this is that in the intro, obviously, they do this thing where it's always set at night in the battle sequence in the first 20 minutes. Then after 2 years, everything's set during the day, so it's always daylight. So essentially the colour pattern's gone from like a purpley blues to yellowy colours because it's a sandy area, right? That in itself would be fine. But none of the landscape looks the same. Like, there's in the intro, there's that big wall that they're defend, like the civilians are defending. That wall isn't there once they in the 2 year time skip.
Wait, what big wall?
There's a big wall they're standing across that the woman who ends up having the kid. She's like, remember they're firing at the Krogan, trying to defend it before the soldiers drop down.
No,
there's like a big wall they're standing on top of that gets a whole. Like, there's a bit which gets blown out of that wall.
I should probably point out at this point that my comments on this film are unfair because I actually had a massive diabetic sugar crash while we were watching this film, and I missed a lot of it because I thought for sure there were no humans on that planet.
Yeah, they were. Until that's who they were coming.
I thought that the Alliance people turned up to colonize the planet.
No.
Right, I thought they were the bad... Because I was watching it going, oh, they're kicking the Krogan off this planet.
No, the Krogan were pirates trying to attack the colonists.
Missed that.
Oh.
Or maybe I saw it and I've forgotten, because I'm not going to lie, I've forgotten most of this movie. Like, the minute this movie was done, I deleted most of it from my brain.
Why?
Because we watched Scooby-Doo the movie straight after this, and that's not a good film, and it's better than this.
Honestly, listener. Yeah.
Turn off the podcast and go watch Scooby-Doo the movie instead.
To be fair, there is a connection. The reason we went to Scooby-Doo is that they both have the lead characters played by Freddie Prinze Jr.
Yep. Yep.
He makes good choices.
Yeah. I mean, he married Sarah Michelle Gellar. That wasn't a bad choice.
To be fair, yeah.
Married Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
So he jumps 2 years forwards. They've built this massive... Yeah, they've built this massive gun.
Yeah.
And there's... So the problem is where we've had none of this build-up, apparently there's an underground lab that we only find out about when, for whatever reason, Tria, who's one of the blue squid-headed women, I can't remember what the name of that race is.
Oh, they did say it. It began with an A. It was like, oh, real.
Arseholes. So they take the squid woman. Vega takes the squid woman down to go into the lab for some information. And they're told, on no uncertain terms, that they're not allowed in.
You don't. Security clearance has been raised and you don't have the clearance.
Yeah, anymore. And there's a guy who's trying to make a delivery there with them who's in like a cap and a red shirt. And he just looks like some gruff delivery guy.
Pizza guy. He looks like a pizza guy.
That doesn't work. So we move on. And there's some sort of object that they found in a cave. They go and destroy the object, which Squid Woman was very upset about. She said, no, we should study it. And they destroy it because that's what they've been told to do. And as they come back, they come into what looks like a...
alien version of Stonehenge.
Yeah, except for... No one questions this. They walk into the alien Stonehenge, and, like, the entire... Like, in circular forms, the whole floor starts to lower into, like, three or four levels. And I'm like, no one's questioning why this ancient...
To be fair,
if you walked into Stonehenge and the floor started to lower, you might be like, that's a bit weird.
I think there was a throwaway line from the Squid Woman about how amazing Parthenon technology was. Paraguay?
Protean.
Protean. I don't get Paraguay. That's how fucking boring this film is. I couldn't remember. Protean. Protean. Sounds like protein, brother.
Protein.
I'm sure there was a throwaway line where she said something about protean technology was fascinating and they still can't explain how they built stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it literally is just a throwaway.
It's tossed aside. Anyway, at this
basically, point... all these things you think are going to be important to the plot, the fact that there's the sudden lockdown of the lab, the fact that there's this Stonehenge thing, that you sit there going, oh, this is all set up, this is going to be really important.
Nope.
None of this is going to come back ever.
No. So a massive alien, suddenly an alien spaceship arrives and starts releasing little bugs into the air. And
because the creators of this film saw a little film called Starship Troopers and went, hey.
I mean, they look exactly like the Starship Troopers.
Hey, we could do that. Freddie Prinze Jr. is kind of a Casper Van Dien type. little bit more likable, to be honest. Mm.
So they basically paralyze all the people. Vega and his team somehow are the pizza delivery man are the only ones not affected for whatever pure luck narrative fucking reason.
The word you're looking for is plot armor.
Yes, they are absolutely riddled with plot armor. So they have to then try and discover what's going on. And long story short, they go into the lab, realize that there's been some shenanigans going on, that for whatever reason, the scientists have been experimenting with like this alien DNA shit and paralysis fluid, and they've created some sort of antidote, which Vega tricks them all into taking by having a sip of alcohol. They free the one Krogan who's still been there after 2 years. Why are they feeding him if they're not doing anything? And they all try and escape, but then the bugs come down. They have to save them. They go onto the ship. They have a big fight. And it turns out that these aliens are ancient as well. They're the ones who killed the Proteans, or they are the Proteans. It never really fully explains that.
They're not the Proteans, because I thought that.
They're like
first.
An evolution of them,
they
aren't
kept
they?
Calling them the Collectors.
Yes.
And it was, they were sort of created by the Proteans. They're sort of a subservient race.
Right.
But you know what? I was tripping on blood sugar, buddy.
I'll be honest.
So maybe really, I made it all up.
It was really hard to follow.
Because I had insane dreams last night, by the way.
Oh, okay.
So we get the bit now, don't we, where Delivery Man betrays them.
Yes.
Because, you know, none of us saw that coming.
Yeah, turns out he's the guy called Mesner who was sent from the Alliance or from... No, it wasn't the Alliance, it was the other group, the Spectres. He was sent by the Spectres to oversee what they were doing and
are
take the
information.
Are
they from the game Spectre?
Yeah, the Spectres are. I think the Spectres are the group that you try and join in the first Mass Effect.
Because they kept saying it, and I just kept going do 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 do.
I wonder where you go with that.
It's James Bond theme, isn't it?
It was close.
Am I wrong?
You. It sounded more like you were doing Insania by Peter Andre.
Fuck, I haven't thought about that in a long time. This is Insania.
Do you know the irony with that song?
No.
So he quote-unquote invented it while he was in the jungle.
Yeah, that's back when I used to watch I'm a Celebrity. I watched him inventing it on the jungle.
Same, right? No.
Oh.
So number one, that's the version I wanted. I wanted him just on a mic, just go do 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 do. But when he came back, obviously it had a lot more production value put into it when he actually released it as a single. However, if you bought the Peter Andre Mysterious Girl single from years before he went into the jungle,
it's the B-side.
Was insane.
Man.
Fucking lied, Jamie.
No, Peter Andre.
I know,
Paragon of Virtue, Peter Andre.
Paragon lost, Jamie. He's...
One hit wonder, Peter Andre, whose only good song is Mysterious Girl.
Oh,
what a banger, though. Mysterious Girl, I want to get close to you. Can we bin off Mass Effect and just spend the next sort of hour singing Peter Andre songs?
I don't think he's got enough songs sing.
Okay. Just singing 90s one hit wonders. Can I interest you in Saturday Night?
Saturday Night Dance, I Like the Way You Move.
Wait, there's more words to it than just Saturday Night?
Yes. Saturday Night Dance, I Like the Way You Move.
Okay,
pretty
how about
baby.
Hey, hey, baby. Ooh! Ha!
I wanna know.
Can we count Natalie Imbruglia as a...
Yeah, fuck it. Why not?
I mean, no one knows any of her other songs.
No one knows Mass Effect Paragon Lost either, so.
Yeah. Nothing's right, I'm torn. I'm all out of faith. This is how I feel. Anyway.
We've got to be professional, Jamie, about Paragon Lost.
Yeah, oh, thrilling. Anyway, so he betrays. Has she turned up as a bug woman yet, or have we skipped that?
No, we skipped the bug woman. But,
Jugs becomes a bug woman.
Yeah, now here's the thing.
That looks exactly like the bug from fucking Starship Troopers, 100%. I'm sorry.
Except that she's just part of it from like the... Just cutting off the nipples from the chesticles up.
Oh, yeah. They know what their audience is. They don't get rid of the tits.
No.
They're like, we've got to have tits. This bug has to have tits, obviously. I'm Vincent Kennedy McMahon.
It's such a weird choice.
It is a weird choice. And there's no weight to it at all.
No, again, it's just thrown in and they're like, oh no. And here's the other thing. After this point, so they find out what they've been doing with the colonists. So they've been paralyzing them and then taking them away in these cocoons. We now find out what they're doing with them, which is they're loading them in one at a time to this other machine while they're still in the cocoons. And then they're sort of gooifying them down to like DNA goop and then shooting that off. And they're using that to build new versions of the collectors. Mm. When they kidnap Jugs... Camille. where they've kidnapped Camille, why did they stick her in a big bug thing? And why didn't they do that with more of them? Because that bug thing was nigh on invincible. If they had more than one of them, it made no sense. Why is that? Well, this one's got huge cans. Let's stick her inside that bug unit thing over there.
Yeah, it just... this is not a good film for female representation.
No.
I'm pretty sure I was trying to pay attention. I'm pretty sure it doesn't pass the what's-it-called test, the Bechdel test.
Yes.
None of the women ever talk about anything that isn't another man.
I'm not sure they talk to each other at all.
I think maybe the Squid Woman talks to Camille at one point. Maybe.
Maybe, but I don't...
But it's only ever about the blokes. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's everyone's coupling off with the two women that are available. Yeah, Mr. Gropey Man, who ends up having the cool honourable death at the end, he's obviously after Camille.
So Camille is with... one of the characters whose names I don't remember, I'll be honest.
Christ, I don't remember what the character's name
is. It's irrelevant.
He dies early on anyway.
I'm going to say, he sort of just vanishes from the movie. Vega's kind of got a weird thing with that single mum.
Yeah, he's
where there's
got...
like a flirty relationship there, but...
Well, he's got a flirty friendship with her, and he's very friendly with her daughter. Like, calls her Private, whatever her surname is. Like,
yeah.
You're always a good lookout for me. But he's actually got romantic intentions towards
Squid Lady.
Squid Lady, whose name is Tria.
See you after the break.
He's obsessed with Tria, and there's many other women on this base, but none of them are important enough to be in the story. And there's like 17 men story.
God forbid we put more women in it.
No, I know.
So then they escape because they drunk the thing that protects them from the paralysis.
Yeah, the antidote, yeah.
And they free the Krogan that they saved earlier in the film.
Yep.
And he's like, I owe you a debt, so I agree to work with you and help you.
No, that was earlier. They've already, the Krogan's already dead.
Oh, so he's been shot in the face at this point?
Yeah, he got shot in the face before they got kidnapped in the pods, didn't
he? Oh, that's when Messner betrays him, isn't
it? Yeah.
Yeah, to be fair, he full on shoots his eyeball out, which was cool.
Yeah, that was a cool bit.
Basically, nothing interesting happens from this point on then.
No, it's just another action sequence, basically, where, So what happens
at
this
point
is...
It's like an escape sequence, isn't it?
Yeah, so what happens at this point is Tria is in a pod. She's somehow managed to get hold of the data from Mesner, and she's got it with her, but her pod has been jettisoned into space and is on a decaying orbit and it's burning up in the atmosphere. The ship, they've managed to destroy enough of it that it's also decaying and burning up in the atmosphere. They've got one ship. For some reason, this alien craft picked up a human cargo... vessel just helpfully available to them, and the only two surviving soldiers, which is Vega and their sniper guy Milk, they've got to make a choice as to whether or not they save the colonists on the ship before it burns up, or they leave the colonists to die and they save just Tria in the pod with the data. And it all comes down to what Vega decides to do. Now, this is the one thing that's good, but unfortunately, by this point, you're like an hour and 20 minutes into an hour and a half long film.
I just wanted it to end.
Yeah.
It was like torture at this point.
But this is a really cool thing, because it comes up with this, you know, will he, won't he, the needs of the many. We both guessed the same. We were like, obviously he's going to pick the colonist because he's going to let his love die.
And he's a hero.
And he's a hero.
You
know,
tragic
blah, blah, blah.
Ending.
You know what?
They subvert it.
I 100% fair play that. He lets the colonists die, including the little girl he said he'd always come back for and protect. Mm. And it's purely selfishly motivated.
Yeah, to save her.
Yeah, and he gets a medal for it because it's like, well, you brought back the data, which was the more important thing, because now you can save more than the amount of colonists you would have saved. But realistically,
he's obviously traumatized by the decision, isn't he?
Because realistically, he did it because he wanted a smush.
Yeah, you know what? Like, oh, this is the more interesting story.
Yeah.
And we don't get it. This is all crammed at the end.
Yeah.
Unless that's what Mass Effect 3 is about.
But I think Mass Effect 3, you're still controlling the character you created, not Vega.
Yeah. Well, because they do that fucking thing at the end, don't they? Where they're like, by the way, it turns out Commander Shepard's still alive.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, that's irrelevant to the story that we're telling here.
Yeah. The other thing is that Vega then goes back to the planet. He's in order, he has to go back to get something. While he's there, he finds the little girl's teddy bear, and he has a proper traumatic flashback. PTSD flashback breakdown.
Mm.
And the thing is, if I wasn't so bored by everything that came up to this point, this would have hit really well.
Yeah, I agree.
And I wanted more of this. I was like, why not tell this story? The ending is him coming to terms with it slightly and saying, you know, he regrets that he left them behind, but he doesn't regret that Tria has, that you know, Tria is still with him. And that's where it ends. The thing is, the opening 20 minutes are unnecessary. Essentially, what you set up in that opening 20 minutes is that Vega becomes the guy in charge of the team and that he has worked with Commander Shepard in the past. But you could set that up in a little bit of quick... Well, you can set up the Shepard thing in quick dialogue in the 2 years forward bit. And no one's going to question why the guy in the highest rank is in charge. So all you have to do is, rather than have that 20 minutes in like setup time, you just go, right, well, Vega is the captain of this team. No one's going to sit there and go, but why isn't the lieutenant in charge? You know, the captain, he's the highest rank. He gets to lead the team. That's all you needed. So that first 20 minutes is nullified. The only thing that's important in that 20 minutes, otherwise, is the relationship he has with the Krogan guy.
Yeah.
But that is forced, because why would they keep him there for 2 years? It makes no sense to keep the one Krogan pirate trapped on the planet for 2 years. So it would make more sense that actually, if you were to do that, the Krogan pledges his life to Vega because he helps him escape just as a guy. It's like, maybe as a scientist or something else, but because he's a Krogan, he's a warrior anyway. I've been trapped in here because the lockdown happened because of the invasion. And Vega's like, well, let him go. He can join us. Oh, I pledge my life to you because you've saved my life.
Mm.
So you don't need the intro part where he spares him from getting shot by his own man.
Yeah.
So you've now, essentially, that first 20 minutes is gone. You don't need any of it now. So that saved you 20 minutes. You can build a bit more of the story within that.
Yeah, I mean, that's really where we should get to know all the characters.
Yeah.
Learn enough about them so that there's emotional weight later in the film.
Yeah.
When things are happening to them.
Yeah.
That way we would probably actually care about the ending. We'd probably care about people who don't make it.
Yeah.
But sadly, what should be an interesting idea is wasted in an animated movie that very few people are ever going to see. Because as we've said to each other, like, this film isn't massively well known. I mean, I've looked it up. There's loads of Mass Effect fans who don't know this exists.
Yeah, it's not. It's not popular. It's not even popular with those who've watched it. And on IMDb, it has a rating of 5.8, which for something that is designed for fans, I imagine, has only been watched by fans, and as you say, not even all of them.
Yeah,
you'd imagine it would have a higher score than that. And it's got a decent cast in it. You know, Freddie Prinze Jr. is not an unknown name.
No.
The guy who plays Mesner is an actor called Vic Mignogna, and he is well known for playing Kirk in the Star Trek Continues series, I think it is, on YouTube, where they basically rebuilt the original series sets of Star Trek.
Right.
And basically continue the story of Star Trek, but with new actors.
Unofficially.
Yeah, unofficially. They used to do full-length episodes, but after what happened, there was a crowdfunding campaign for a particular Star Trek fan film that got over $1 million. And because of that, Paramount were like, look, this is our property. So they went, you know, we don't want to curtail fan freedoms as such, but obviously we don't want people, you know, this is a $1 million movie. Mm. People might confuse it for an official product.
Yeah.
So what they decided to do was go, right, you can make fan films, but I think there's a limit, time limit of like 10 to 15 minutes each episode.
Right.
So you can't like, so you can't basically go, I've done a 45 minute Star Trek and it feels just like Star Trek. Mm. You're limited on time.
Paramount worried that fans would actually make the show good again. What? I don't even know that for myself. I'm going based on things you've said because I've not seen any new Star Trek.
Star Trek Lower Decks has been cancelled after its fifth season. And there was someone online going, oh, don't worry, I've made a campaign to like, we can campaign for Paramount to keep it alive. And I'm like, no, thanks. It's the worst thing it's not even the worst Star Trek I've ever seen. It's the worst thing I have ever seen.
Well, that's not true. You've seen Uwe Boll movies.
No, honestly, I'd watch Paragon Lost before I watched Star Trek Lower Decks.
Lower Decks, really?
And I absolutely adore Star Trek, but that one is just... If there was a series of Star Trek that was made, that is definitely not Star Trek. It's that.
It's Lower Decks.
Yeah, it's because it's full of cameos. It's right. Jammed full of cameos. So in that sense, it's good because you're like, oh, look, they brought just back the voice service. Of this. Oh, look, I remember that from an episode 20 years ago. That, yeah, it's all fan service, but the stories are shit, the comedy doesn't land, and the animation is awful.
Yeah.
The fact that they've made 5 seasons in less than 3 years give you an idea of how the animation quality they've got going on.
Yeah, how many episodes a season?
I think it's at least 13, but I'd have to double check. I've only ever, like, I watched the first 5 episodes of season 1, forced myself to get through that much, and then after I got to, like, I was like, I can't.
And then you're like, I can't do it anymore.
Honest to God, no.
Fair play.
Shall we talk about the CGI?
Shall we talk about how this movie blew big baby chunks? I have a pet peeve, which is I don't like when they mix CGI animation with 2D drawn animation.
Mm-hmm.
Never have, not just for this film. I don't even like it in Beauty and the Beast, in the ballroom scene,
right,
where the ballroom is CGI. I don't like it. I don't know why. I just don't. Nothing gets helped by it.
Okay.
The CGI looks worse because it's in an animated universe.
Yeah.
And the 2D animation just looks weird on top of it.
Yeah.
So for me, it's a no dog.
Yeah. Well, what doesn't help with this is whether you like CGI and 2D animation crossing or not, this doesn't do it very well. The intro has a couple of okay-ish CGI moments, but they feel like it's almost like a whiplash effect seeing them after, like, in the middle of 2D animated fight scenes. The other issue is sometimes the 3D elements, so like there's these fighter ships that the team drops down on in the first 20 minutes, those have a lot of textures on them. Like they're covered in scuffs and dirt marks and things like that. They don't look great, don't get me wrong, but there's some texture on it. And then when it jumps the 2-year time skip, the main base is CGI, but like really basic, like almost mid-90s CGI. Like, the texture work is minimal. And I think that maybe that was a stylistic choice to make it match in with the 2D animation more, but it really doesn't work. And when they bring out the... Not the warthog, what's their version of it? They have that...
Don't ask me, mongoose?
No, it might be a mongoose. The six-wheel tank thing that they've got, the APC. They drive one of them out, and that appears in a couple of scenes. That looks horrific. It's clearly not the same model and texture work that's in the games, even. Like, the games literally look better than the CGI in this film. And I don't understand why, if they were at least on the run-up to Mass Effect 3, why they didn't just use the vehicle animations and stuff from the games.
I'm not sure. I'm guessing... I mean,
the texture work's bland. Like, it's really, it's block colors. It's literally 90s CGI.
I'm guessing this was outsourced to a smaller animation company and probably didn't have a huge budget.
I imagine it didn't have a huge budget. Yeah, I can imagine that. The director, just so you know, he's mostly known for animation work, and on his animation work, he's well known for a lot of big names. So Fate Grand Order is one of his. He's worked on Evangelion. He's worked...
Evangelion, I think it's pronounced.
Oh, is it? Okay, sorry. Evangelion. He's worked on Ghost in the Shell. He's worked on, and I mean the original Ghost in the Shell, as well as all the way up to Ghost in the Shell Arise Border 2 in 2013. He's worked on Star Wars, The Clone Wars as an artist on that. Appleseed, he's done Sakura Wars. He's done some design work on the Panzer Dragoon movie, which we're going to cover later this year. There's a lot of stuff that he has worked on. However, as a director, he has only done 6 things, one of which is this. A year after this, he did Ghost in the Shell Arise, and then he did, in 2015, Ghost in the Shell Arise Alternative Architecture. He directed 1 episode of The Clone Wars, and that's it. And he's done additional crew work, weirdly enough, on things like Dead or Alive 4 and Street Fighter 4. So he's a known artist, should I say, that's been given a directorial debut almost with this. It feels to me like they gave him the direction job because maybe he could keep the costs down.
That sounds reasonable.
Because that sounds very much like what I would expect.
Because to be fair, as we've said, this only plays well to people who know the games. It's got a limited fan base, is what I'm trying to say. Why would they want to spend a lot of money on it?
Yeah, true. So the writer, Henry Gilroy, he's written for Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right.
But the TV series between 2015 and 2019. I didn't even know there was one.
Well, I was not aware that there was a Guardians of the Galaxy TV series.
Yeah.
Is it animated?
I imagine it must be.
Because I would know if there was a live action one, I'm sure.
And Avengers Assemble, 3 episodes of that, which is a 127 episode Avengers series.
That's an animated show.
Must be, yeah. He also did Star Wars Rebels, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Yeah, he's done a lot of comic book adaptations. Mass Effect being one of them for video games as well. But yeah, a lot of them. Iron Man, he's done G.I. Joe, he's done... Yeah, he's got a very particular sub-element.
Yeah.
That he's worked on. Interesting. He's also written 21 episodes of Noddy.
Noddy?
Yeah.
As in... Noddy. I don't even know what to say because I actually don't know anything about Noddy. I never even watched it as a kid.
It looks like a CGI reboot of Noddy from 2001 to 2013. I didn't even know that existed.
Kill it, kill it, kill it, kill it, kill it.
He did an episode of Jackie Chan Adventures.
Now we're talking.
He did 4 episodes of The Mask TV series. An episode of Earthworm Jim. That's video game related. But yeah, so it had a crew that have experience in not only video game adaptations, but it seems mostly superhero adaptations, and big names as well, though not the biggest versions of those names. For example, Avengers Assemble, not the Avengers movies.
Yeah.
But this film feels really cheap. I can't... there's no budgetary information.
It probably was.
Yeah.
I bet you this was made for fucking peanuts.
Literal peanuts.
Mm. I guarantee you, like, people like Freddie Prinze Jr. did this because they're fans of the game, I bet you.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. Most of the non-fans are saying that it must only be for fans, but a lot of the fans are basically saying it doesn't really connect. But it's got... Some of them are saying, though, it's got great story and acting. Which, I mean, the acting's fine, but the story mostly garbage.
I think that's a lot of people being blinded by how good of an idea that last moment is.
Mm.
And then forgetting how shit the lead-up was. Whereas we're bitter and we've been like, everything that led to here was terrible.
Yeah. Here's the problem. This wasn't... For me, this is one of the few times, and I mean very few, where I've watched one of these with Jamie, and I have actively apologised for making him watch it. I didn't apologise for Video Game Earth Force, which is...
Really should have done that.
Because that still was quite funny.
It wasn't.
It was funny watching you hate that one. Because it's cheesy enough.
No, it's not.
That it was hilarious.
It's bad enough.
Maximum Surge was fucking hilariously shit. Because there was a cheesemo element. But there isn't any.
You're
this.
A cheesemo.
This isn't cheesy. It's just shit. And it was a shame because the main issues are plot related. A wasted intro 20 minutes, a lack of allowing moments to happen, even certain story elements that don't make sense, like Camille being put into the body of an alien rather than being turned into goop.
This was trash. Consign it to the bin. Don't watch it. Move on.
So on that front, Jeremy, knowing that obviously this comes from a story-heavy series,
mm-hmm.
and yet still somehow failed to meet the mark,
mm-hmm.
do you think that it is more difficult to adapt a story-heavy series, say if they were to do a film of Alan Wake, for example, versus adapting a game into a film that has very little story, such as, say, Pac-Man or Super Mario or something like that?
It shouldn't be, but it is. And I think the reason it is because, for example, if you were to do a Pac-Man movie or a Super Mario movie, you basically can invent your story whole cloth.
Yeah.
Because really, sorry for any fans out there, there is no story to Super Mario beyond Bowser kidnaps Peach.
Yeah.
In fact, the only thing you should have to have in a Super Mario film is Bowser kidnaps Peach.
Yep.
And which he does Illumination in both. Couldn't even get that right.
He does in the end kidnap Peach.
True.
And he kidnaps Daisy in the 93 one.
Yeah, no one cares about that one.
It's the best one.
It's not. Or Pac-Man, then. All you need in Pac-Man is Pac-Man and four ghosts.
Yep.
You could essentially invent your story beyond that. If you were to do something that is praised for its story, like a Silent Hill or an Alan Wake or a Bioshock even, there's so many things you have to hit and do them right. And then you've got the eternal battle of, do you copy it word for word like it is in the game? In which case, you run the risk of turning into Gus Van Sant's Psycho, where it's like, well, why does this exist? It's a shot-for-shot remake. It's exactly the same script. Like, literally, why have you made it? Like, what's the point? Or you do your own interpretation on it, and then you get all the fans going, well, it was better the way Sam Lake wrote it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think we've said, haven't we? We think that's why the Fallout series has been so well received, because it isn't actually based on any of the Fallout games. It's in the world of the Fallout games.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. There was rumors for a while. More than just rumors. Remedy themselves confirmed it. AMC bought the rights to do an Alan Wake series. We haven't heard anything about that since, so I'm guessing it's kind of died. Which kind of is a good thing, because I don't trust the people who made Walking Dead to make an Alan Wake series. It'd just be garbage.
Alan Wake will have died in, like, season 11.
Yeah, it'd be terrible. Adapting something like that's really hard, because you get someone who doesn't care about the source material, whereas something like Super Mario Brothers, as we saw with the Illumination film, it's incredibly easy to care about that. Like, that film, for all its flaws, was filled with Mario references.
Yeah.
There was the bit where they even did the animation like it was one of the games.
Yep.
There was references to the 93 movie.
Yep.
There was references to all the old games.
And the old cartoon shows with the Mario rap.
Yeah, like...
with the Mario Brothers, plumbing's the game.
But that's easy because they're just aesthetic things.
Yeah. They're like, as we were talking about with Lower Decks, the thing I hate in Lower Decks. The only good thing about Lower Decks is that it throws in loads of Easter eggs and cameos.
Yeah.
It's the only thing it has. And it's the Super Mario Illumination film. To be fair, it's better than Lower Decks, but it's largely, as you say, Easter eggs and cameos.
Yeah, whereas if you were to do, let's say, Alan Wake, if you were to do Alan Wake or Control or any of the Remedy games, the whole point of a Remedy game is there's always this ambiguity to it and this mystery that never fully gets resolved. It's very old school horror in that way, where you never get a full answer to anything.
Yeah.
I don't have any faith if they did it as a show that they'd keep that. Something like Alan Wake as well, like, even though it is set in America, there is something so quintessentially Finnish about Alan Wake.
Right.
So something Scandinavian. It's got a real Scandinavian feel to it in its tone and its outlook. I don't think I'd trust any American network to make it.
No.
I think you need a Scandinavian network to make it. It's got a real Scandinavian vibe to it.
I think the only American company that I think could probably pull it off is Constantine Films.
Well, they're a German company, so you're already factually inaccurate in your trolling. So that's good. Well done. It's like you're trying to piss me off.
Do you not think Paul W.S. Anderson could make a really good Alan Wake series?
Honestly.
Alan gets replaced by Alice again. Alice Wake.
Alice Wake is Alan Wake's wife.
There's Mila Jovovich's part created for you.
Honestly, if they announce an Alan Wake film and then announce Paul W.S. Anderson is making it, I will commit suicide. Because I do not want to live in a world where Paul W.S. Anderson makes a fucking Alan Wake movie.
How bad would it be?
He wouldn't even understand it anyway. This is a man who couldn't even understand the plot to Resident Evil. He couldn't understand fucking Alan Wake.
To be fair, Resident Evil is high art.
I love Resident Evil, but it's not high art.
No, I'm joking. Would you be angrier or surprisingly happy if Paul W.S. Anderson did make an Alan Wake film and it was legitimately brilliant?
I'd still kill myself because I don't want to live in a world where he's right. I say the word I want to live in, and I don't want to be mean to it. I don't want to be mean to anyone, but I'm going to be because I'm a bitter, bitter fat man. I want to live in a world where Paul Anderson doesn't make another goddamn movie for the rest of his life, because the man's awful. He is a creatively bankrupt fraudster whose sets are dangerous and people die on them.
Yeah, we've talked about that before, haven't we?
Yeah, no, screw him and screw Uwe Boll while we're at it.
Yeah, might as well throw that out.
In terms of a director who could do it, let's see. Who could do an Alan Wake film? Robert Eggers. Robert Eggers could probably do a good...
What other films has Robert Eggers done?
The Witch, The Lighthouse with Willem Dafoe, Northman.
Very artsy.
He's considered one of these elevated horror directors, which is a garbage term. Yeah. His newest film is... he's doing a remake of Nosferatu with Willem Dafoe in it.
I mean, perfect casting.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know what,
Willem Dafoe has played the role before.
Yorgos Lanthimos could probably give it a good shot.
Oh, okay.
Who did Killing of a Sacred Deer and Poor Things.
It's only because he's done a film with deer in it before.
Werner Herzog could probably give it a good go.
Yeah.
That probably should be weird, but yeah, fuck it. Let's have Werner Herzog do Alan Wake, why not? We did have a little fun casting this if we did it as a live-action remake, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Because we got so fucking bored that we had to.
The only problem is it's a generic Hollywood cast.
Yeah, we were going to reunite the Red Notice cast, weren't we?
Pretty much, yeah.
Which is the first film I've ever seen that if you told me it was written by AI, I'd believe you.
See, I thought Red Notice was fine. It wasn't brilliant.
It is fine. That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
It's generically fine.
Yes, very much so.
It's painfully fine.
Yeah.
There is not 1 ounce of originality in the film Red Notice.
No, not at all.
And the cast do not work together.
No.
Because you've got three people who are usually leads all trying to steal the spotlight from one another.
Yeah.
All trying to mug for the camera. Ryan Reynolds is doing his Deadpool shtick.
Yep.
Dwayne Johnson's doing his The Rock shtick, and Gal Gadot's doing whatever it is that Gal Gadot does that makes people keep putting her in films, and I don't quite understand it. Anyway, you've been listening to VGMP, the Video Game Movie Podcast. The takeaway here is do not watch Mass Effect Paragon Lost. Do go and watch Scooby-Doo the movie from 2001, I think it is. Do like, share, subscribe, etc. Please do spread the word so that we can have more people listen to our terrible views and comment telling us why we're morons who only play games that no one really likes. Because we do. We don't like games that mainstream people like. We don't like COD. We don't like Fallout. We don't like Fortnite. We don't like Minecraft. We basically hate gaming. We're not real gamers, quote unquote.
We're the old school gamers.
And if you hang around right now, you'll get a little trailer for our upcoming episode of VGMP, where we're going to be talking about episodes 5 and 6 of Amazon's Fallout TV series. Hasta la vista, baby. Don't watch Mass Effect, it's terrible. Today, we are talking about episodes 5 and 6 of Amazon's brand new Fallout TV series. I like Lucy in this. Lucy's a good character, actually.
Yeah, she's horny as fuck.
I love the fact that she's horny. She's spunky, but
dude,
not...
you're not American. You can't call someone spunky.
I hate it up here.
She was in Kick-Ass 2. She was also in a film last year called Junk Mail. Mail spelt as in M-A-L-E. I love the fact it's got a score of 6.9. 69, dude.
Wonderful.
It's like you can't make a funny joke about it without offending these guys. I mean, one funny joke I told on maybe 10 occasions.
What was the joke?
All I know is it was a huge bomb.
You hear me, Jonathan Nolan?
You know he doesn't have any internet connection where he is. Jonathan.
Right, I'm about to ask you if that's true, and if the next words out of your mouth or a stupid pun, I will pour the rest of this Pepsi Max on that recording box.
Thanks very much for joining us.
Game over, yeah!
Cyberpunk Studios.